Hello, and welcome to The Middle. Conversations at the intersection of public relations, journalism, and marketing, where we talk about what's happening behind the scenes to tell and sell stories to audiences in North America and around the world. I'm your host, Sophie Natto, the National Media Lead at Edelman Canada. So, let's get that conversation started.
Now, we've done a lot of talking about Macintosh recently, but today, for the first time ever, I'd like to let Macintosh speak for itself.
Hello, I am Macintosh.
Wasn't it Mark Twain who wrote, "There's no such thing as a new idea"? Or maybe I just read that on my Facebook feed. Being original has never been easy, but in a time when everybody has a channel, things have also never been noisier. On this episode of The Middle, is creativity dead? I'm joined by two guys who haven't given up on chasing a brilliant idea. Miles Savage is the agency lead at Google Canada. He's the bridge between advertising agencies and Google, supporting the creative work that flows through the platform. Before Google, he worked with many of the great brands you know and love. Andrew Simon is the chief creative officer here at Edelman Canada. He is our arbiter of great ideas, with a career's worth of advertising and creative experience on both sides of the border. He's redefining what creative persuasion looks like in an evolving media ecosystem. Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. So everybody's got a channel now. So what does it mean to actually be creative in a modern world? Andrew.
Oh, Andrew?
You.
I thought I was age before beauty. Okay. Well, creativity has, it's never changed. So I think it's very funny. It's like, you know, always the tools change. Just like if we talk about fine artists, you know, there's an impressionist period, there's, you know, a cubist period, there's all kinds of periods and people respond to others, but it doesn't stop people from being creative. And I'm one of those annoying people who remind people that everyone is creative, that we're born that way, and that we continue to be that way. And it's sucked out of some of us, and others of us, we continue to practice. So I'm a huge fan of creativity. I think it solves world problems, and I think it's the way forward, and it's the way I like to live my life. But I kind of take offense in a way to people who say, like, oh, you know, creativity has changed, because I think it's actually creativity hasn't changed. It's the tools of the trade. And are we adapting to those tools?
Yeah, I guess, Miles, my issue is that, you know, anybody with an Instagram account can claim that they're creative. And so it kind of waters down the authenticity of that label, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think creativity is just a label that's thrown around a lot. At the end of the day, I think I agree with what Andrew was saying. Creativity is just about solving problems. Anybody who's solving a problem can say we're being creative. It can be applied to literally anything. Look at creative accounting. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe not the most legitimate of passages to take.
Maybe not good,
but
yes.
The notion of creativity is just trying to solve a problem, try to do something a little bit differently. Creativity doesn't need to be defined by a channel. And I think that's the biggest problem that exists today is we all try to put things in boxes. We try to focus on this channel should look like this or that channel should look like that. And I think that's where creativity is getting watered down for what it really is.
A lot of humans, though, do need definitions to be able to exist in the world, need routines, need patterns to be able to go to work every day. Andrew, how has this business changed since you've started? I mean, you know, everything's kind of combining together, advertising, marketing, PR, storytelling. How do you see the world now from where
you started?
Well,
it's funny because it's, you know, everybody's an agency these days. So for all those who talk about like the death of the agency, it's like there are more agencies than ever before because production companies are agencies, PR agencies are agencies, media companies are agencies, consulting companies are agencies. So there obviously it's a place that we all play. The question is just how do you stick to what you do best and how do you play that out? So when I think about kind of the way that I would approach from a creative perspective, I always think about what can we apply to it from our expertise from my past. And my past is very long. And I've been, you know, from the dawn of time in advertising. And I can remember, you know, doing the 30-second TV spot, and that was everything. And that's what we poured everything into it. And then people would say, what else are you doing? I'd be like, it doesn't matter because it's all about TV. And that also goes for the award shows that used to be the TV awards, you know, and that's what Cannes was all about. And times have changed, and it's fascinating. And I feel so kind of honored to be a part of the change changes because just, you know, again, like everything changes. Think about basketball. Like basketball, they're today, when you look at the Golden State Warriors, the way that they play basketball is very different than the way teams played 2 years ago and the way teams before that played 2 years before that. And the fact that we have this ability to continue to evolve but still express ourselves creatively, I think, to solve problems, back to that, is a really wonderful thing.
But Miles, Andrew is maybe a unicorn in the sense that his capacity to deal with change may be bigger than the rest of the world. I mean, how would you describe the quality of ideas and work in this area coming across your desk at Google? How are you feeling about stuff these days?
It always comes down to the individual, unfortunately. Creativity always comes down to the individual. I think you touched on before, we love routines. Routines are bad things. They take us down bad habits sometimes. Mm-hmm. I think when we look at, you know, going back to before about the agency world, In the old time, the traditional world, agencies were very simple. They were one thing, and then we've diverged and we've become specialists in all these different ways. I think we're now starting to come back together.
Oh, that's interesting. What do you mean by that?
I think people are starting to focus on the user again. I think when we start to think about the end consumer, the person that's actually going to be using or consuming the content, that's when things start to get really, really good, because it's a useful thing. I think the opportunity for brands right now is, how do you create advertising or something that is useful for them to in the real world? So we were talking earlier about this dog selfie. So I don't know, when you tie things back to a real problem, the answers tend to come through very simply. Do you have a dog?
No, but I love them.
Okay, so I have a dog, and okay. I think from a social standpoint, we live in this world where everyone likes to post photos about their dog or whatever the case may be. If you've ever tried to take a photo of your dog, it is literally impossible to do. It just doesn't happen. Dogs are distracted by 1,000 different things every second of every day.
They don't prioritize this stuff.
They don't.
That's right.
So this company, I think it was a Kickstarter project or something like that, created a clip that goes onto the top of your phone that you can put a doggy treat or a ball or whatever your dog loves, and they all of a sudden instantly stare straight at the camera.
Mm.
Now, it's not a revolutionary, world-changing problem to solve, but it's a real problem that consumers every day have. Mm-hmm. I guess the question I have is, why did it have to be an entrepreneurial individual who came up with this idea, and why couldn't a brand and an agency have created that as part of a brief for a particular client? I think that's the area that agencies need to start moving into today. When we look at agencies are just that. They're an agent on behalf of their clients, and they're doing work for their clients. Mm. I think it's how do we get to better requests to those agencies?
So wait, mass marketing, Andrew, dead? Is it dead?
Well, before I answer that, I want to talk about dogs. Because
and who can blame you?
Yes, I mean, really, they're wonderful.
Wonderful,
but
it's true.
The interesting thing is the project and the Kickstarter that Miles was talking about, that was in 2015. In 2017, there actually was an agency and there was a client, Pedigree, out of New Zealand, who did that exact idea. Now, whether they saw the PoochSelfie.com or not, or the Kickstarter, who knows? But the fact that they actually attached their dentist sticks to the top of the thing, and they actually added another layer, which was a filter that you could take pictures of your dogs, and that they did facial recognition with dogs. So they actually added to it, which I thought was just like, now you took it to the next level. That made it really amazing. So it's not a question of ability. It is a question of application. And is it the fault of the agencies that we're not being proactive enough to say, hey, here's something, because we know your business so well, here's something that you can do and apply? Or is it the fault of the client that they're not giving the agency those opportunities or inspiring the agencies to aspire to those kind of solutions?
It almost sounds like mass marketing and the idea of sort of going to the masses, lazy ideation, creativity.
Well,
is that fair?
Go ahead, Miles.
Outcome-based. I think too often we see the marketing process as being linear. I start with a brief, or I start 2019. What's my brief? What's my campaign? What mediums am I going to be running in, whether that's TV, video, digital, out of home, whatever the case may be? What's my get-to-buy that I need to communicate? And then how do we create this linear path to get to live in market? Forget about it. Think about next year. I really like, and where I think the best creativity comes from, is this more of a flywheel approach. How are we constantly evolving, iterating? How is this something dynamic that we can all tap into? And once we see a problem, jump in and solve.
Yeah, but Andrew, isn't it hard to convince clients to do this flywheel business?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, clients hold 50% of the blame. But it's also the other 50% is us for not talking about narratives and not talking about stories. So why I sit where I sit now, and not to put down my ad agency background at all, but I found I was a little frustrated by the let's now exactly what Miles was talking about. Let's move on to the next thing. And then what's the new thing? And then what's the new box? And how does that change? Without any thought to this is an ongoing story for a brand. How are we going to establish a story for this brand that will continue through the time? So when I see things like Marmite, and I'm like going, you either love it or you hate it. That is a work of art to me because it's a proposition that we can hold to, and then you keep on working at it. That's an endless...
It's still true today.
Right. And they do better work today than they've ever done. They did genetics testing. Like, that's brilliant. That's applying something that's of the culture of the moment and saying, yes, are you? Do you have a predisposition to liking Marmite or not? That to me is genius. And that is, it was very well received because it was a smart solution to a problem, but continuing the story for a particular brand.
Miles, do you see, you must see tons coming across your desk at Google. How often do clients and agencies commit to storytelling in the way that Andrew's talking about?
I would say rarely. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really difficult thing to hitch your horse to this kind of one idea that lives on forever.
Right.
Nike is phenomenal at it as a brand. I mean, obviously one of the biggest brands in the world, but everything they do ladders back to, Just Do It and supporting their athletes. And that's what they're very much focused on, and they find a way to make it live and breathe. But I think a lot of marketers just move to this transactional. I've got this new product in market. Why are you creating this product? Because I could. Not because the market needed it, but because I could and I needed to launch a new SKU. And I think we're just a little bit, we approach the world from an inside out perspective. What can our company do and how do we then push that to the mass market,
right,
versus what does the world need or what do consumers need? What product would fulfill that need? How does that tie to my particular business? And is that a core part of who this company is and our values? Outside in is a beautiful thing. Maybe it's utopian. I think it's...
purpose-filled marketing.
It is purpose-filled, but let me tell you the problem. And okay, let me tell you, Miles, while you're wrong.
Okay.
Of course, we always need to know from the consumer first, but like, let's talk about Steve Jobs, and I'm not Steve Jobs reincarnated, but his belief was like, I'm not going to ask the consumers because they don't know what they want. And it's not just him. It was Henry Ford who said, if I ask people, they would just want faster horses. So I think one of the real tricks is how do you pull that information out using, cultural anthropology and things like that without asking consumers, like, tell me what you need, because if you tell me what you need, likely it's probably not what you really need.
But I think it's about going a layer deeper. So to use Henry Ford as an example, faster horses, yes, but why do you need faster horses? Because they want to get from A to B in a faster way. Okay, so the automobile is a solution to that. Faster horses is the way the average Joe consumer thinks to solve that problem. This is why we need creative people.
Mm.
Creative people approach things differently, right?
Yeah.
God bless you.
This feels like a good part to talk about data, though, because the reality of the situation is that firms like ours are using data more and more to generate insights to help make some of these decisions. Because let's be honest, not everybody is naturally creative and wakes up every morning like Andrew with like a million beautiful ideas that will totally make millions and millions of dollars. So how do you calculate for the data and how it influences ideas and creativity? Because, by the way, newsrooms are using this to drive their story choices about 50% of the time, some newsrooms are telling me, and
right,
it's changing things.
Yeah, it's great. And you know what? I fully embrace it when it's inspiring and informing. And when it's used, when you go, because we're always looking for stimuli. We're looking for something that we could attach to, because also to tell a story, you need facts. You need points of reality so that you can pull those in and go, because of this, this, because of this, this, because of this, this. So I love data. I think the question is, are you using data as kind of an excuse to make decisions, or are you just getting lost in the numbers? So again, just because I love sports, let's talk about the fact that teams, not only baseball teams, basketball teams, every team, are using analytics more than they ever have before. They're using it because it works. The question is, who's running the front office? And is it, you know, analytics informs decisions? It doesn't make the decisions. And at the end of the day, the players still have to take the court or the field, and they still have to perform.
You're saying Moneyball. You're not a Moneyball guy.
I don't know if I am or not. I mean, I love Billy Bean. I love Brad Pitt. But I'm not sure. You know what? I do believe in data. I just kind of go, there's a point where you bring the creativity to it. And so you never dismiss anything. You look at what the information is. Just same thing from a consumer standpoint. What are consumers telling you? It could be very misinterpreted. Mm. So I think that's the problem. Sometimes clients will look at it and go like, here's what they're saying. It's actually not what they're saying. Mm. What they're saying is, they're not saying, give me faster horses. They're saying, I want to get from point A to point B faster. Using Pizza Hut as an example, when consumers say, or the interpretation is, people want their pizza faster. What Pizza Hut found many years ago was they didn't want it faster. They were speaking to families. Families wanted to know when the pizza would arrive. Why? Because kids would go bananas in your house and you try to corral the kids and you're going, oh my gosh, if I could just figure out if I have 30 minutes or 35 minutes or 40 minutes or whatever it is, the solution to that is tell me when it's going to arrive. Mm. It's not tell me when it's going to arrive, how it's going to arrive.
This is why Uber Eats is so fantastic, because they warn you right before it comes.
Yeah. It's the same as the load bar on the internet, right? It's about expectation. There is no standard for the load bar. It is just know that I am progressing, that I am moving forward in the queue.
You got to tell us a little bit more about how data factors into the work you're doing at Google, because I'm fascinated by, I know a lot of people are worried about big data and what it means and kind of the insights it gives us. And it makes people nervous, I think. But in my mind, I think it's amazing because it unlocks secrets about how we really feel. And I often wonder if Google Trends aren't really sort of the DNA behind how we think and feel about the world. So to the extent that you can, how does it fit in? Tell us everything.
You're right. Look, data is everywhere. The answer is in the data. It is not the answer. Data is not the answer. You have to kind of go in and start to look at it and probe it and query it.
Right.
Heard a great analogy the other day was, imagine people talk about data as being oil, you know, lubricating everything. It's how do we mine the oil to kind of get insights? This gentleman referred to it more as like the ocean, more like water. You know, it's everywhere. If we were to take a bucket and just dip a bucket in the and take a bucket of water and look in it, we'd see nothing in the bucket but water. That would assume that there's nothing in the data. Mm-hmm. You got to find the right places, you know. Mm-hmm. So we always go to search trend data. You know, people put the most random stuff into search queries every single day. Mm-hmm. You know, that search bar is likely to know you're pregnant before your significant other is pregnant because you're feeling symptoms of, mm-hmm. you know, nausea in the morning or headaches or whatever the case may be.
Sure.
You know, there was a great use case for flu trends a couple of years ago where we actually started to build out scripts to predict where the flu was actually moving based on symptoms that people were punching into their Google search bar. So, you know, as a advertising guy, I always encourage marketers to look at your search trend data. You can just go into Google search and just start to type in type your brand name and is or who or what or that, and it'll bring up the most commonly searched queries around your brand. I guarantee there's things in there that you didn't expect.
By the way, it's a great ideation tool as well.
Absolutely.
So it's like if you're thinking and you're trying to think as a creative person and thinking, how can I think about this differently and abstract, etc., by putting in terms, and then you're finding new roots. Like roots are growing in the ground. You're kind of go, oh, let me follow that path and that path. And it's a really wonderful, powerful thing.
Okay, it is powerful. Let's talk a little bit about how, though in many cases, the audience is starting to tune out, maybe more sophisticated than ever. They can see the advertising. I taught my 6-year-old daughter now knows the difference. She's like, oh, they're trying to sell me something, right, mommy? I'm like, yeah, baby, they are. And I think it's the knowledge is great. How do you address the impact on marketing and advertising and creativity that this tuning out comes with? I mean, on Netflix, you can just, there's no ads. I'm happy there. Everything's good. So what should we be worrying about?
I always like to say that there's a bit of a misnomer that people don't like ads. People don't like bad ads.
Interesting. Do you have data to back that up?
Well, my data would be I have a bunch of friends in advertising and I have a bunch of friends who are on Bay Street in finance and they are not ad guys, but they're the first ones to send me an amazing ad. Did you see this ad? Check this out. Because people love good advertising. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is that there is sometimes a lack of really good advertising or relevant advertising. So I think once you start to line those things up of, you know, quality and, you know, and relevance, then all of a sudden people don't mind advertising so much. The advent of ad blockers was because trying to sell me something that I'm not interested in is not a good idea.
I love that our expectations are higher as consumers. It's like we're now putting people on the spot. So it's not, you're locked in a room, you have no other choices. I guess I'm going to watch this. I'm going to sit through it. That you actually have the power, but then also you recognize, thanks to, you know, the Hulus of the world and the Netflix of the world, et cetera, that you can move on and et cetera. You have to earn my attention and my engagement. I think that's great. That makes that, because truthfully, there's a lot of agencies, creative people, strategists, everyone who are lazy. They're not applying their tools of the trade, and they're not recognizing that the audiences do have a decision to make. And if you're not holding their attention for a second, or you're not doing something that shows them utility in some way, they will leave you. And so sometimes I think we get lost in the whole, let's optimize it by making it shorter. To me, that equals it's not great, but if it's less time, then people will put up with it, which is really a disaster.
Is it true still that the more money you have, the better off you're going to be in terms of landing creativity, ads, marketing? Is that still true, or does trust play a role here too?
More money doesn't make better work. I think when you look at the most creative product that agencies in Canada, I think, are putting out, a lot of it is geared around the pro bono world, because they're given full rein to be as creative as they want. And there's no budgets there, or there's very minimal budgets. But what's really interesting is that really creative work that is done is the work that goes on to win at awards and puts an agency in the spotlight for producing really creative work and attracts marketers because they want to do that really creative work that you do. And then we fall back into this environment of, oh, but here's my linear advertising plan, or here's, I need TV spot in market, or here's my get to buy, like going back to those bad linear habits from before. So creativity is what draws everybody in. It's a tough one.
I don't know, Andrew. I mean, if I gave you, you know, $5 million, couldn't you make my thing the best thing?
Is that real? You're going to give me $5
yeah.
million?
Oh, wow. Sure. I just have it lying back here. Let me just grab it and give it to you.
I'm really glad I'm doing this podcast.
Lucrative.
Yes. No, you know what? I grew up in the States, and I worked in the ad agency world in the States, and the budgets I worked on were, you know, multi-million dollar budgets. I will tell you, like, it was that much harder to sell great ideas because I think there was a mentality of, well, we'll just, you know, if we throw enough stuff at people, then it's something's going to stick.
Interesting.
And when I moved to Canada many years ago, I was really refreshed by, okay, we don't have as much money. We got to be smarter. We have to be more ingenious about the customer journey. We have to know where we're going to hit them versus just kind of hoping that something, you know, kind of literally sticks and that they hold on to it. So I would much rather have, hopefully no clients are listening to this, a smaller budget than a bigger budget.
Oh no.
And it's funny. I mean, go look at I'm Australian, obviously, coming from the Australian market.
What?
Yeah, I know. I don't sound, this is not made up.
Maybe we should open with that.
Australia is a smaller market than Canada, smaller budgets. It's an isolated market. If you look at all the surrounding regions of Australia, it's Asian language. So there's not even any scale from what can happen in Australia. Australians are amazingly scrappy. They have small budgets. They find a way to make good work sing. And if you look at the global award show circuit, Australians win, I would say, disproportionately right. to the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's true. And they learn to be scrappy. You learn to be smarter, et cetera. But I'm not putting down big budgets in reality, because let's talk about Tide.
Okay.
So it's a Tide ad, which, you know, won the Super Bowl. Was a great, I think everybody, both creatively, business-wise, they would all say genius. You needed a certain amount of money to buy a certain number of spots in the Super Bowl, regardless of, you know, how much that actually was. But it was a significant amount of money to make that idea work. And that doesn't get lost on me. It's like I look at that and go, that idea would have failed if it was only one spot. Mm. You needed the scale, but it was because it was very insightful. And then they could play it out. So, you know, that might be a special case, but I think it's just like, even if you have a big budget, like, you know, make sure that you're you really have an insight versus just throwing money around.
I mean, TV as a distribution channel is really starting to wane, and we're seeing a lot of plays through social. Even though social media, though, is the least trusted distribution channel in Canada per our trust barometer data. So how does social fit into this for you guys? Is it bad for creativity? Is it good? How is it influencing things?
Social is a challenging one for me. Social is a big echo chamber. You know, I'm not on any social media.
You're not.
Other than
Twitter.
How on Twitter.
Earth are you creative then?
Because I look to try and solve problems in the world. I'd rather try and understand, okay, where's a gap? How do I fill something? It's probably my blind spot is social media for sure.
Interesting.
But I feel better without it personally. Mm-hmm. I didn't need to have that kind of tap into what was going on. It was just getting filled with garbage and distractions. That was my perspective on it.
Yeah.
There's definitely a role for social. What I think social does a really powerful job of is bringing the consumer in. And I think ideas are better and creativity is better when consumers are involved and get to play and are tactile with ideas. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the role that social can play. Yeah.
I think of that, you know, the Reese candy converter social media ads that they had around Halloween where you could like take all your kids' candy and put them in a machine and get all Reese. Like, I thought that was quite clever.
So here's the thing. Yeah. And you could, you know, they could have shared that in many different ways. That was an activation that was in New York City by Washington, you know, Square Park. How many people saw that, right? Very few. But thanks to it being a really strong idea and something very shareable, like it went places. And then media saw it, and then they glommed onto it, and et cetera. So I look at, I'm, of course, very distrustful of most things in life, but and of social, but I look at it as like a godsend in a lot of ways because it helps creative, really creative ideas carry.
Right. So it's a toss-up then, really. Good and bad, depending on what you're working on.
Yeah, for sure, always. And the thing we have to be careful of is that we're not misusing it. With great power comes great responsibility, as a wise man once said. So that's really what it comes back to.
It has a role to play. Just don't treat it as another channel that you force canned messages down. It's not just an ongoing billboard.
It's another way to dilute creativity, I suppose, is another way to look at it, right? Before I let you guys go, would love to leave on an optimistic note. You know, it sounds like you're telling me creativity is not dead. So what, in fact, does the future of creativity look like to you?
It's funny because I'm teaching a class this semester, and literally the subject matter is the future of advertising, and which it could be the future of creativity. I would say that for me, it is, I am always optimistic. I look for the next, you know, thing and way that we can apply it. The future looks like getting to know people better and using our information and being more human. And we can say like AI is part of the future of creativity, but it's also like, hopefully we're going to be more, we're going to pay more attention to humanity than ever before, because I think it always comes back to what are pain points for people? How can we provide a utility? How do brands fit into that equation? And being really useful. And if you can be truthful about that, to me, there's nothing better. So I think that I'm really, I know that Miles, you must be really pumped because you're that kind of person. But I feel honored in what I do, but I also am really excited about what the next thing is. And when students say to me, like, what is the next thing? I was like, nobody knows. Nobody has that answer of like what the next tool is that's coming down. We can assume what it is. The key things are like, know your audience, know what the real issue is, know what the real challenge is, and then apply really smart thinking and then figure out what is the best way to get that message and disseminate it.
Go tell those students, go find the next thing, because that's the opportunity right now. Yeah. I agree. It comes down to curiosity. Creatives need to be curious and leave no stone unturned. Try and find the answer to a real problem that is consumer-centric. If you can focus on the user first, what their particular problem is, and be tirelessly curious in terms of how to solve it, that's the future of creativity. It's a great time. I mean, we have more tools available to us than ever before. Just don't get focused on the tools. Focus on the outcome.
And one extra bit, we have more content than ever before. So you can get, that could depress you and say like, whoa, wait, because now I'm not sticking out as much as I used to. It's like, right. But then the bar has to get higher. So you have to get better at storytelling. You have to get better at honing your message, and that will benefit all of us.
I feel like you guys have given us lots of great ideas to think about. So thank you so much for joining me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to continue the conversation, find us on Twitter Andrew is at Andrew L. Simon, Miles is at Savage Miles, and I'm at Sophie Natto.